check out our website at www.thefantasyamateurs.com.
On this edition of the Nasty Cast, Nate and Van are joined by Yancey Eaton from the Dear Mr. Fantasy and Pop Goes Your World podcasts. We take a look at the recent news, talk top 50 starting pitchers, and round out the show with our top 5 honest advertising slogans.
Fantasy jousting?
Joe left me mid sashimi.
I got live breaking news.
There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. With hashtag Shark Week.
Do you actually balance your checkbook?
So he hasn't had a chance to suck yet.
I want somebody with some chest hair I can grip onto.
What are his weapons?
Shut up and talk.
Those boards don't work on water.
I'm the destroyer of burritos.
Be sure to cut all that out, Jesse.
That's all we talk about on this podcast is interesting things.
This isn't a joke.
Eating ain't cheating.
Episode 111 of the NastyCast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Dots Pretzels. I am Nathan Dockin. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dockin. I'm joined today, of course, by the man in a van. It is Van Lee. Welcome back.
Why, thank you. I would like to state that with this episode, I believe I am now the fourth most common heard voice on this podcast, or approaching it at the very least. So that's a great honor that I feel bestowed upon me.
You know, you're not even a guest at this point. You're just co-host number two. How does that sound?
That works for me. And in fact, you always call the other guest the guest of honor. I would actually prefer if you called me the guest of dishonor. I think that suits me quite well.
I agree. Yeah, you're like like on Star Trek, you wouldn't be Commander Riker. You would be like, I don't know, the Dr. Broad or something like that. Does that make sense?
No, because I don't watch Star Trek. But I'll give you a thumbs up anyway.
Okay. It probably didn't make much sense anyway, to be perfectly honest. I just, I'm a little behind on my Star Trek characters. It's been a while since I've seen them.
Well, see, I'll stick with Dr. Broad, though. That works out for me pretty well, too.
I'm shocked I could remember Riker. That's pretty much that and Data and then the Klingon.
I know the Riker guy is the beard. That's the only thing I know about him.
Yep, big manly dude. But anyway, speaking of big manly dudes, we have with us today a very special guest. Of course, you know him from the Pop Goes Your World podcast with Chris McBrien and the former podcast with Chris McBrien, Dear Mr. Fantasy, Yancey Eaton. Welcome to the Nasty Cast one more time.
What's up, Pimp? Thank you for having me, and it couldn't be more perfect timing as a gigantic plane flies overhead. This is like a recurring problem now. Every time I record a podcast, there's constantly planes. We have a pretty big overlap as far as listenership between the Nasty Cast and Dear Mr. Fantasy. I think. I'd like to think so, because we have so many of the same guests and stuff. But if you guys have been listening, like, I don't know what it is about being out in this podcast show, but every single time I go out here to record, there's helicopters. The other night, somebody got shot at 7-Eleven down the road, so they were, like, searching for somebody during the entire, like, hour and a half that we were recording podcasts. And this is the longest intro ever. Nobody cares, so I'm just going to shut up and let you start talking.
No, that actually, believe it or not, that reminds me, okay, Bismarck, North Dakota, one of the lowest crime rate places probably in the entire nation. North Dakota in general, and there was some dude who was, like, he shot somebody multiple times. I think the guy ended up living, but anyway, he was in our area, and so, unbeknownst to me, there is, you know, like, drones and helicopters and stuff flying around overhead, and I look outside, and there's cops and canine dogs walking the streets, and I'm like, what in the hell is going on? And so there was this dude who was wanted for attempted murder who was hiding in somebody's house right across the street from me.
Wow.
Nice. Well,
like, man, this is the kind of crap.
Occasionally, I have a cat that meows.
You guys both live in, like, the weirdest places. I don't know what it is. Is it because there's so many people that do podcasting that live, like Chris McBrien. He lives, like, in the middle of Canada somewhere. You guys, you know, you live in Bismarck. You said you lived in Missouri, right, Van? Like,
yep.
What is it about, like, these really, like, just BFE towns and states that just draw people to podcasting? Because there are so many people like that. Anybody that I ever talked to, they all live in, like, these really, really small towns like that.
There's no one to talk to.
Yeah, exactly.
No, there
there's
you go.
To do.
Wow. That was not planned, first and foremost.
Yeah, we have to search the internet to find somebody to talk about baseball with. For God's sakes, I'm getting a – I've broadcast nationally that I'm doing a a startup live in-person auction draft here in Bismarck, and I have scrapped to finally get 10 people to show up to it, and one of them is Tim McLeod driving all the way from Canada.
You know? Wow.
So it's hard to find people around here interested.
Dude, I definitely know what that feels like, though. Like, I've talked about this on podcasts before. I started playing fantasy baseball just because none of my family and nobody down here really cares about baseball. I live in South Florida, and the weather's perfect, and there's a lot to do. So to get a bunch of people interested in one particular thing is actually really hard. So, like, I started, you know, listening to podcasts and reaching out to people and just befriending people one by one. And then now all of my quote-unquote baseball friends are people who I've mostly never met before at all. So I totally understand that. Like, you have to kind of, like, go find those people. But, I mean, there's a relatively large swath of people that play fantasy baseball, but finding them is kind of the challenge.
Yeah, exactly. I was floored, actually, that there is one guy in the Facebook group who's going to be partaking in the Fantasy Assembly of Roto Teams, is what it's called, or FART for short. But he moved from, I don't remember where he moved from, but he moved to Beulah, North Dakota, which is still like 2 hours away or something like that. But it feels like he's so close because he's actually in North Dakota, and I've talked to him about baseball.
And as a last A-side here, Yancey, you said earlier that there were all these murders and helicopters and blah, blah, blah. And then you just now said I'm in South Florida, and it all started to make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Dude, the rumors, everything you've heard, the articles, the Florida Man Twitter accounts, the subreddits, everything is 100% true. This is like the weirdest hodgepodge of, like, you have – old people who are on edge because they're about to die. You have, you know, a huge Hispanic population, which I'm not saying that's a problem. It's just like a hodgepodge. You have like old school rednecks, like diehard rednecks. You have, you know, business people here making money off of the rednecks. Like, you just have everything. It's just, there's so much going on here, and it's such a large population that it's just, I mean, there's crazy everywhere, but it's just, I don't know why it just seems to congregate over here in Florida, dude. It's absolutely insane.
And I can attest probably the same for Nathan, that we are basically just surrounded by a bunch of white people.
Yep. How boring.
Yep. So what's the craziest place you've ever lived? Email us, thefantasyamateurs@gmail.com. You can also tweet at us, @fantasyamateurs. You can also go to thefantasyamateurs.com to check out my rankings and our media page, watch me get slapped in the face with a ham steak, and so on and so forth. You can also get yourself a t-shirt, which I promise you we will eventually ship to you. And if you would please rate and review the podcast on iTunes, it makes us quite happy. So, on that note, we've got some news to talk about, gentlemen, so let's get into that.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball.
So the first thing we will talk about, again, this is a weekly podcast, so this news is like a little bit old at this point. Sonny Gray shut down for 3 weeks with a lat strain. Yancey, we'll start with you. What sort of impact does this have for the A's rotation? And I guess before you even get to that, talk about Sonny Gray's value. Are you drafting him at all this year?
I wasn't planning on drafting him to begin with, just because I'm not super into starting pitchers who have like a 7K per nine. And I mean, this just further exacerbates the fact that he's not very particularly valuable. I do think, though, that everybody's sleeper, Jarrell Cotton, is basically a lock to make the rotation for opening day. And I do like this too for I'm not sure if it's going to be Triggs or Hahn, but I do think it's going to be Triggs that's going to be that number five starter. And I mean, I'm sure we listen to the same podcast, we read most of the same articles on the same sites. Jarrell Cotton seems to be like the number one sleeper behind James Paxton, probably, that everybody seems to be mentioning. So I just think that this is going to push his value to like, or his draft value, like super, super high. I don't know where he's being drafted right now. I don't know if you have it in front of you, but I just see a ton of people reaching for him. The same two or three names as far as like starting pitchers and sleepers and stuff goes, it's probably going to be Jarrell Cotton.
Yeah, Cotton number 69 as far as starting pitchers overall.
Nice.
Pick 257 on average. So yeah, and he's climbing too. He's right now in the company of Blake Snell, Taiwan Walker, Joe Ross, who are all, you know, younger pitchers with similar upsides, I guess I would say. Just in front of Trevor Bauer, I would say I am definitely, I've had enough Trevor Bauer, so between those guys I'm definitely going with Cotton. But Van, what do you think? Jarrell Cotton, Andrew Triggs, perhaps? Those guys interest you at all?
I think you're probably had too many drone issues if you're that afraid of Trevor Bauer. I mean, come on.
Ooh,
I still
nice.
Have some value. No,
callback.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Well done.
Cotton is, like Yancey said, I think it's going to push his value to where I'm not that interested. I think he could have provided value. Pitching's always deep anymore, so I'm very picky with who I take, and that leads right into the fact that I have no interest in Sonny Gray. I did think he might have some sort of a rebound this year, but with a lat strain, no thank you. I think it's going to carry over into the season, and even if he gets healthy, he's not going to give you a full set of innings, and you know, the 7.9 K per nine is a perfect thing to point at and say, nah, no thanks. So no thanks to him. I do think Cotton gets the job. But it's just the price is going to be too much for me to want to pay it this year.
Yeah, you know, it angers me because I was out on Sonny Gray coming into the year anyway. There were a lot of people who were on him to be a bounce back candidate, you know, citing like a low strand rate, a high BABIP against, so on and so forth. And I just was not having it. And so it really ticks me off when you get guys like that that I wasn't on anyway going down with injury because it's just one less guy that I don't want that's not going to be taken. You know, and push everybody else up. And now it also has Drill Cotton, who is, you know, he's getting pushed up now, like you guys said. He's one of the first guys that I wrote about at Fantastics this year back in earlier mid-February. And that was, you know, at that point, his draft price was great. It will certainly be less so in the coming weeks when people are actually drafting. So that is duly unfortunate. However, Andrew Triggs is still a guy who I'm interested in. I'm banking on him to take that fifth starter job. And Jesse Hahn perhaps goes to AAA. I assume he's still got options left. And he's reworking his delivery a little bit, and I believe his velocity is up. So that is something to look out for. But Triggs is the guy who I've been on all off season. So I'm very interested to see where he will go. I'm going to be drafting him late in a lot of deeper leagues. And he's had a pretty good spring so far. But we'll move on to the Indians, where Carlos Carrasco will miss his next spring training start with a swollen elbow. So, Yancey, we'll start with you again. Are we discounting him in drafts? Are you still drafting Carlos Carrasco? Are you worried?
So, I keep hearing people saying that he's incredibly injury-prone, which I understand, but he had Tommy John back in 2011. He hasn't had an arm or an elbow related injury since then. He's had stuff like hamstring injuries or just inflammation and stuff. Nothing super, super serious. I wonder if this is going to be something that's just from fatigue. Maybe he's overworked it early in the spring, or he wasn't completely stretched out before he started pitching. I'm not sure exactly what it is. I'm trying to like decide if this is where it suppresses his ADP to where it's a value, or if this is like a legitimate sign that I should just stay away because we're going to be dealing with these nagging injuries all year long. I'm not a doctor. I don't really know the extent to which the inflammation is bothering him or how long it's going to take for it to go away. There's just so many pitchers that are, you know, the ADP is going to go down. We'll see that, you know, it takes a couple weeks or a week or whatever for it to adjust. But at that point, there's just so many other starting pitchers in that vicinity that I can just take who I know are completely healthy right now, and I'm probably just going to pass on them.
Yeah, at this point, it doesn't seem like there's any structural damage with the elbow, but he is going to be, you know, skipped, like I said. So it's definitely troubling as we approach opening day. Right now, Carlos Carrasco is going in front of Jacob deGrom, Kyle Hendricks, Carlos Martinez, Cole Hamels, Van, any of those guys that you are not drafting over Carlos Carrasco at this point with this injury scare?
Let me say this. Francona came out today and said that no structural damage. It's just swelling. He's also, his wife is due in like 7 to 10 days. So they're kind of thinking of skipping a start and getting him back with his family for a bit. I'm really not all that concerned. Like Yancey said, I'm not a doctor. And you don't know how hard it is for me to say that because on my podcast, it's a running gag that I am a doctor, but I'll go with it. So I'm not that worried about it. I never did think Carlos Carrasco was going to throw 220 innings. I always consider him a two or maybe 180 inning guy at best, but it's 180 really good innings. So I'm still kind of looking at him. I'll probably not own him because at this point, you know, in the ADP draft list, there are plenty of guys I would like up there. Like Carlos Martinez is going a few picks later. I'd go with that. Cole Hamels, I do like, although being in Texas kind of suppresses his numbers a bit. So there are plenty of options. But if, you know, at once a week later, like you said, Yancey, when we see what the ADP does, maybe then we can make a determination on whether or not this is a value or if, you know, it didn't affect it enough. So I'm not too worried about it, that sort of thing.
Interesting. Yeah, I think if Carrasco comes at a discount, then perhaps I would be interested. I really don't like taking players that are already injured coming into the season, especially a guy like Carrasco, like you guys have said, who has continually dealt with injuries already. So you kind of got to kind of bake that in already. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Thankfully, I don't have any drafts for probably a good week or 10 days. So I'll certainly be playing it by ear. It's something to keep an eye on for sure. But let's go into another injury, and that is Jason Kipnis. He's going to open the season on a disabled list due to a sore rotator cuff. So, Van, let's start with you this time. Switch things up. What does this do for your Kipnis value?
Plummets. I have no interest in him this year. He's off my top 15 now. That's going to mess with his power if it's even carries over into the season. And as of right now, they're saying that he's going to be out for a bit, so he'll start the season on the DL. Like we talked about in our second base rankings, there's plenty of stuff there. Plenty of people to take, so no thank you for me on Jason Kipnis unless you're getting him in the obscenely late and you can throw him on your bench and see what happens. And maybe this is coincidental, but I mean, his teammate Brantley, Michael Brantley, had shoulder issues as well, and I mean, he struggled nonstop for the last couple of years, so maybe the Indians medical staff struggles with that. I don't know if that's a fair statement, but I'm going to go with it. And I did want to point out, though, that Michael Brantley did double today in the minors game that they played. So maybe he's going to provide some value. But Kipnis, I'm out on.
All right. Yancey, does this open up any playing time for anyone that you're interested in on Cleveland? Are you still drafting the Kipnis?
Just real quickly, I want to point out that Van is, one, not a doctor, but two, also critical of doctors, which is a fantastic pairing. So. You got that going for you, Van, which is excellent.
I strive to please. What can I say?
Yeah. As far as this year, I think they're going to move Jose Ramirez back off of third base to second base, at least temporarily, and they'll have Giovanni Urshela playing third base. Yeah, I love that because, you know, once he does come back, then next year we're going to be drafting Jose Ramirez as a second or third base, you know, kind of like super utility player, which I love. I just love players. It's obviously like overstated how much positional flexibility has in a draft, but I just love it so much. It makes stuff so easy because I play in a lot of daily lineups leagues and, you know, head-to-head points leagues and stuff. And just another chink in the armor, you know what I mean? Like if I can have a second and third, and Jose Ramirez is one of my favorite players to target this offseason anyway. So, I mean, heck, why not? I think that's actually all I have about it. It sucks for Kipnis. I'm not sure exactly how long he's going to be out. I do know there's a big difference between a sore rotator cuff and a torn rotator cuff. So, hopefully this is just one of those weird inflammation things. I mean, I really have no idea. I mean, he could be playing in 2 weeks and he could be completely fine. I'm not sure, but I am going to stay away from it. And like you guys alluded to, second base is just it's so deep this season. It's actually really, really weird because I remember listening to podcast previews on other people's podcasts like 3 years ago, and they were talking about the, you know, how bereft of talent second base is. It's weird how stuff changes year over year like this, but yeah, I'm just staying away from Kipnis, guys. There's just so many other options that I could take. I mean, I could wait till the 18th round and take like Joe Panic or something. You know what I mean? I'm just not interested.
Yeah. And I did want to point out too, that even last year, I thought second base was a lot more shallow, and I kind of struggled with the position. But through to this year, it's crazy, crazy, crazy deep. And I also want to say, with the positional versatility that you're talking about, do you remember when years ago it was just Ben Zobrist, and that was it? That Yep. was positional versatility? And to be honest, I mean, yeah, you could put him in some other places, but you really didn't get quite the value you get out of shortstop or second base from him. But guys like Jose Ramirez or – you know, just any of those guys with multiple positional versatility now can provide value at multiple positions. Matt Carpenter, key example.
Hernan
that guy's
Perez.
Amazing. Yeah, Hernan Perez. There you go.
Hernan Yancey Eaton Perez, as I like to call him. The biggest call last year for you. Kipnis right now going in front of the likes of Dustin Pedroia, Jose Peraza, while Van and I have both been notoriously haters on Ben Zobrist, Javier Baez, Jonathan Scope, Logan Forsyth, I'm dropping him down, I think, below all of them. I would still take him over Devin Travis, who's the 20th second baseman, just because Travis is also recovering from an injury. So I'm not really expecting too much from him. I'm not in love with Devin Travis either, Hernan Perez behind him. So that's, you know, I wasn't crazy on Kipnis anyway, so that does have me lowering him. And Jose Ramirez, this is a big boost for his value, in my opinion, as one of the things that really was a detractor for his value was the fact that he's going to be hitting probably fifth or sixth all year, which I said back in our, whatever the hell position, third base preview, that that sort of capped his value, and it would take a it would take an injury to either Francisco Lindor or Jason Kipnis for Jose Ramirez to get at the top lineup where he deserves to be anyway, because he has a great skill set for that. Lo and behold, here's an injury to Jason Kipnis, and now Jose Ramirez might be the leadoff batter, number two, depending on whatever the Indians want to do on any given day. So I'm definitely giving Jose Ramirez a bump, even though we don't know for sure how long Kipnis is going to be out. Maybe they want to ease him back, you know, so that's a whole... I mean, at this point, they already said that he's starting the season on the DL, and we're still several weeks out, you know, from even opening day. So that makes me think that it's a fairly severe injury if they're already saying that at this point. So our last bit of news as we just injury after injury, Anthony Desclafani, who is one of my favorite pitchers coming into last year, he's got a strained UCL, which you know, doesn't necessarily mean Tommy John surgery, but it pretty much means Tommy John surgery. I'm not drafting Desclafani now with this news. He's going to be shut down for a long time. Either of you guys interested in Desclafani at all?
No.
No, not at all.
He was at the very back end of pitchers I was considering in redraft leagues, and this completely takes him out of consideration. I mean, maybe in 3 months we can kind of like reassess and see where he's at, and he might be like a, you know, like a mid-season ad if you need a streamer or something like that. But it's, I mean, as much as I like him too, Nate, he's not exactly like in a prime situation where, you know, they're not going to push him because, you know, his team, the Reds, aren't in contention cycle. They play in an awful home ballpark. It's just all signs are just down or putting down for him. So it's going to be a complete avoid for me, I think.
Yeah, and I liked him last year a lot, just kind of like Nathan said. However, I liked him last year a lot because you got him so cheap. This year, because of how successful he was, the price was too high, and I was never going to own him in any leagues before this. Now I have no interest. And it's potentially possible that he does a Tanaka and he's perfectly fine, or Garrett Richards, where they don't have to have the surgery, but I just have no interest in it. Like we said, pitching is deep. Find somebody else.
Exactly. You know, I'm going to be in an NL-only FSWA league this year run by Andy Behrens, and I was thinking if I would even be interested in Desclafani as like an endgame pick, and I just don't think that I am. There's so many darts to throw with healthy people that, you know, I think that maybe as an absolute endgamer that I could just stash on my DL until whenever he's healthy, but aside from that, just no interest at all. So with that, let's get into some positive news, and we're going to go into some ADP wars.
It's that time again. That's right. It's fantasy baseball season, and the Fantasy Black Book is back and better than ever. This is Joe Pizzapia, author of the 9-time best-selling Fantasy Black Book series, number one right now on Amazon, on iTunes, and for the first time ever, the Fantasy Baseball Black Book can be held in your hand. Yes, what a beautiful world we live in. Head over to Amazon and buy your hard copy as well today. Baseball is coming. Are you ready?
All right, our next segment is ADP Wars. But you know what? In between, just now, when that little drop, that fancy drop that we have, was going on, we got a call from none other than the great Jesse Jordan. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, I'm here to fix a sound issue.
Yeah, Yancey's voice is a little high. Can you lower it?
Yeah, make him a little less gay, but just a little.
Shots fired. Wow. Oh.
I've thought of that joke for like weeks.
Well, and I realized that I don't think we said that at the beginning of the show, so I just came across as a real jerk. So yeah. I apologize in that regard, Yancey.
And we're actually going to edit out the apology too, so people are just going to continue thinking that you're just a total douchebag. So
and that really falls in line with what most people think, so I'm okay with that.
Yeah. So, Jesse, you've been sorely missed. Welcome back to the show, which I imagine that you're going to display your increased wisdom in fantasy baseball, right?
No. Okay. But I am excited for, I don't know if it's been announced yet, but I've got a hell of a top five list prepared for you guys.
That's right. You know what? I forgot to even mention that at the top of the show. At the end, we're actually going to do a bullshit segment for the first time in a long time. And that's going to be the top five honest advertising slogans for products. So that's going to be good. So hopefully people realize that when they got to or read the episode description. Because, yeah, I totally forgot to even touch on that at the top of the show. I'm a good host. So we can count on you to pipe in with your witty quips or whatever you have to say at random points until then.
I'll make sure I interrupt every time Yancey's about to talk so then he's, you know, I fix that manly voice issue.
Perfect. If we could somehow overlay like my voice on your voice, I think it would just be perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Perfect harmony.
Yeah. Oh man, that would sound like Satan had come on the podcast. Anyway.
So yeah, baseball.
Baseball. ADP Wars is this upcoming segment after that brief tangent. And you guys know the drill at this point. These guys are going at the same point in drafts. So we're going to start off with Yu Darvish versus Johnny Cueto. Both of their ADPs are 43 according to Fantasy Pros average draft position. Yancey, we shall start with you. Both these guys are on the board. You're looking for a pitcher. Which one are you going to draft?
I like both of them. And this ADP war is particularly difficult because they are so close in ADP, so you can't even say like, oh, I'll just, you know, take the guy that's being drafted a few picks later. They literally have identical ADPs. Cueto, I think, is remarkably underrated every single year. Everybody keeps talking like he's this, you know, he's prone to injuries all the time, which just isn't the case. And, you know, playing in San Francisco for another year, being, you know, more acclimated to that pitching staff and to the catchers and everything. I love Cueto. However, I think with Darvish, he came back from injury last year and he actually had his lowest walk rate of his career in Major League Baseball, which defies logic to me. This is his walk year. This is his free agent year, basically. And Texas is in a cycle of contention. They want to win this year. And all signs point to them just throwing him out there, basically letting him go deep into games, not worrying about rest or anything like that. And I think this might be like a, hopefully, assuming he remains healthy, this might be like a 220 inning season for Yu Darvish with just an absolutely ridiculous strikeout rate. So just on upside alone, I think I'm going to take Darvish. And I do understand that there is a slightly elevated injury risk there. But man, those strikeouts, though, that's absolute money for me. So it's Darvish. They're both fantastic pitchers. I'm not going to hit on Cueto, but I want all the shares of Darvish I can get this year.
All right, Van, what about you?
Yeah, I completely agree. Cueto is criminally underrated. I think people just have this thing in their mind that he's just not what he is, but he is. He's very, very good. And as far as the injury thing goes, he's thrown 200 innings the last three seasons. I think 2015 is clearly the outlier as far as performance. That's the year Cueto had like a 3.5 ERA. He's good. He's very, very good. However, if one of these two guys, if at the end of the season we look at the starting pitcher rankings and one of these two guys were to be number one or number two since Clayton Kershaw exists, it would be Yu Darvish. I mean, he has the talent, and if he pitches the innings, he's going to rack up an insane amount of strikeouts. So I'm going Darvish hands down on upside alone. This was not tough for me, even though I firmly believe that Cueto is really good.
I have a very similar answer to what both of you said. Cueto is super safe to me. Of course, the last time that I owned him was at 2013 where he got injured. So I still have a bad taste in my mouth with Cueto. But, you know, with Cueto, just an 8.11 K per 9 last year. But since he throws so many darn innings, 198 strikeouts, you know, as he was approaching 220 innings, four of the last 5 years, over 200 innings. He's got the whip advantage over Yu Darvish. Darvish, he did have the best command of his career, like you said, Yancey, which is just crazy because they always say the command is the last thing that comes back after Tommy John surgery. But his first pitch strike rate was just 58%, which leads me to believe that maybe that was a little bit fortunate and, perhaps that could regress up closer to 3, you know, where he's been pretty much most of his career. But, yeah, close to 12 strikeouts per 9 innings last year. And he's got a ton of upside. Cueto's the safer play, but Darvish is the upside play, and that's where I'm going to go here. I don't think he's going to go 220 this year. I think he's probably going to be closer to like 180, 185, just because he only threw 100 innings last year, and that's just a hell of a jump for anybody. So I kind of think that if you're drafting him, I'm sort of expecting like an all-star break disabled list stint, like, oh, he's all of a sudden he's got fatigue or he has got a cramp in his leg or something like that. And they put him on the DL, get him a nice couple weeks of rest in there on the all-star break so that he can come back and keep his innings down a little bit because the Rangers are hopeful to go deep in the playoffs as well. So even with that, even with limited innings, I would still, I think, rather have Yu Darvish based on the strikeouts and the upside. So clean sweep there, but let's move on to our second one. That is going to be Danny Duffy, whose average draft position is 103, against Kenta Maeda, who's two picks behind him at 105. Van, start us off.
This one's interesting to me. Usually, particularly at this point in the draft, I'm going to go upside, which I almost often do on pitchers anyway. And I think the upside lies with Danny Duffy here. However, I just can't do it. I just don't trust it. He's a Royal. The Royals are notorious for just screwing everything up with these big-time prospects, and I don't know, something about it. I can't quite put my finger on it. I mean, all the statistics last year show that he improved. However, he did also start the season in the bullpen. So there's no guarantee, per se, that he stays the full season in the rotation, though I think that's what they're going to try to do because they'll get the most value out of it. So I'm going to stick with Maeda. I think they're Maeda's super safe, and he's not going to hurt you in any category virtually. So I'll go with that. The strikeout rates are a little better than I thought they would be when he came over. So that kind of helps him out, too.
Yeah, I'm a notorious Duffy hater. Joe and I both have that in common. RIP Joe. He'll be back maybe eventually at some point. But anyway, you know, when I was on SiriusXM last year with Fantastics, and we were talking about the emergence of Danny Duffy, I was kind of going back and forth with Skylar Dombrowski, and he was pro Duffy, and I was anti Duffy. I said, listen, like, you know, he gets the second, third time through the order, and he just craps the bed. I don't see any, you know, anything to look at here, and he was on the other side. He said any lefty that's throwing 95 with any kind of off-speed stuff has my interest, and he ended up being very much correct, but I don't care. I'm not drafting Danny Duffy this year. I don't see him holding up over the course of a full year. He's got a 43% fly ball rate, which is great for Kauffman, you know, a very spacious park there. Also displayed the best walk rate of his career, 210 walks per nine. But he outperformed his metrics. He had 351 ERA, but 383 and 379 FIP and XFIP. He had a very much elevated 81% strand rate, 290 BABIP. That isn't so much out of line for a fly ball pitcher, but a 37% hard contact against, that I think leads me to believe that even with a heavy fly ball profile, that BABIP was pretty fortunate last year. I think that'll rise a lot next year, and you'll see more hits landing than this past year. He destroyed lefties last year, 201 WOBA, but against righties, he's still got a little bit of work to do, 325 WOBA against there. So I'm going to go with Kenta Maeda. 11.6 swing and strike rate last year, the 12th in all of baseball. He was also 16th in soft contact in all of baseball, 20% soft contact induced, over a strikeout per inning. Love Kenta Maeda. Really, the only knock on him is that he doesn't pitch deep into games. 32 starts last year. He was under 190 innings, 180. I think he was at about 175 last year. So that's really the only thing. Like, if you're in a quality start league, maybe you ding him a little bit there. But either way, against Duffy, I'm going to go with Maeda here. But Yancey, what say you?
One of the most underrated aspects of going third when analyzing a player is everybody says all the shit that you had prepared. let me just say that I'm on the same side as you guys. Danny Duffy, I was trying to think of a player comp of the last two or three years as far as starting pitchers go, where they had like this meteoric rise, like they came out of nowhere and were really good, and then they completely fell off the next season. And it kind of feels like Colin McHugh. Remember whenever Colin McHugh was like, he had that one good season and he had one of the highest spin rates in all of baseball. And like, he has this nasty curveball and everybody's just like in love with him. Or even in the same pitching staff, Dallas Keuchel, you know, he wins the Cy Young, and all of a sudden, like, he completely falls apart. Like you're talking about, like, his strand rate, it was like 5 or 6 percentage points higher than it was the year before. You know, the BABIP isn't like super out of line or anything, but there were just little pieces here and there, like across the board. There wasn't one, you know, advanced metric that sticks out as like that was the determinant of his success. But I just feel like not every single thing is going to go right for him next season, and he's a major regression candidate for me. I don't know why. Like you guys are saying, I'm trying to pinpoint exactly why I'm so down on him. I think the innings has something to do with it, but Kenta Maeda also probably isn't going to get much higher than 180 or 185 innings also. So I just think Maeda is so, so safe. And, you know, he's kind of like a quiet ace, much like in like the similar vein of like a Tanaka, where it's not sexy to draft him, but I do think that he's going to give you about an 8.5, almost, you know, 9 Ks per 9. And I just, I don't know. I just think he's super, super safe. I'm not going to be drafting Duffy at all for some reason. I don't believe him, and I'm not a buyer.
Awesome.
A quick note real quick on Danny Duffy. Nate, you mentioned that whoever it was you were arguing with said he's a, you know, hard-throwing lefty. He's also only 6'2 and 185, which does not really fit the profile of a flame-throwing, you know, big pitcher. So guys that are kind of that size, who aren't small by any means but also aren't big, I don't really trust that they're going to have that velocity for a long, long time.
Yeah, exactly. I really think that he's going to be prone to injury, which is funny matching these two up because Maeda, when he came over, he was the one who supposedly had the injury concern. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I think the Maeda is being really disrespected this year. We talked about guys that, you know, have similar stats, like a Carlos Carrasco, like a, you know, he has even better strikeout rates than Tanaka, who's basically being drafted like an ace. So I might end up owning Kenta Maeda on a lot of teams this year. we shall see. But on to our third ADP war. That's going to be Felix Hernandez, ADP 120, against Rich Hill, 122. And so I'm going to start this one. Felix crushed me in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League last year, and I hate him. I could just leave it there and say I'll never draft him again. But let me just point out, 7.16 K per 9, the worst of his career. 3.82 walks per 9, also the worst of his career. A strikeout minus walk percentage of 8.7%, the 14th worst in all of baseball. Around the likes of Dickey, Patrick Corbin was better than him at 9.3% K minus walk rate. His FIP was even worse at 3.82. Then his 3.82 ERA, I mean, mid-4s ERA. Just have no interest in Felix Hernandez, even though supposedly he's worked on his lower half this year and, you know, supposed to be trending up in the velocity. So we'll see how that goes. It makes me a little more optimistic that last year was going to be the outlier. He can bounce back a little bit this year. But Rich Hill is the guy for me, even though he's, I mean, if you get 150 innings out of him, then I think you'll be praising the fantasy gods. He threw 110 and a third last year. I wouldn't expect too much more than that. But, you know, elite ratios when he was out there, 212 ERA, 21.9% strikeout minus walk rate. Sixth best in baseball, if you're talking about complete opposite, practically, of Felix Hernandez. And, of course, I had to, when I was, you know, finding that stat on Fangraphs, I had to go with the minimum innings pitched of 110 because he only threw 100 innings last year.
Just to get him in there.
Yeah, exactly. So that skews
slight
things.
Slight caveat.
Yeah. So that skews things a little bit. But either way, Rich Hill, I think that if you get him, you can complement him, you know, fill in with those other innings with some sort of replacement, especially in a shallow league. I would prefer Hill because the replacement level pitcher off the waiver wire is so much better than I would go with Hill. But Yancey, what do you say?
You're really like bringing the stats and the numbers tonight. So I'm going to kind of like skip that over all the stuff that I wrote down like tediously with my hand like the last 3 hours. I like looking at like cliches that people, you know, kind of like throw out there in articles and on podcasts. And I listen to a lot of other podcasts, all the big ones and a lot of the little, you know, the smaller ones and stuff. And they'll use one reason for promoting a player or being the reason why they like a player, and they'll use that same logic, but they'll twist it and go to the other side for a different player. So with Clayton Kershaw, there are people who are literally talking about in rotisserie leagues drafting him with the first pick overall. I don't condone that, but almost every single site you go to, they'll talk about he's a top five pick. He's the consensus number one pitcher. I totally agree. He's very, very good. But, you know, he also had back surgery, and I got in 2 car accidents in 3 years, and I have back pain. And the thing about backs is they don't always get better, and there's a huge injury concern there. Like, he missed a lot of time last season. But then these analysts will say that, oh, well, if you pair, you know, X number of months or X number of innings of Clayton Kershaw ratios with a league average starting pitcher, well, then there you go. So why is that strategy okay for a top five draft pick, but it's not okay for Rich Hill? Like, people are saying, oh, he's only going to pitch 120 innings. I don't care. Like, if he's literally going to pitch at like a 2.5 or under ERA with an elite, you know, 11 or 12 Ks per nine, like, I honestly do not care. And I'm taking him much later than I would a Clayton Kershaw. But like, we have like our blinders on. We don't want to talk about the fact that, like, you know, Clayton Kershaw does have question marks. He does have injury concerns. Nobody is talking about Clayton Kershaw as if he could potentially have a setback or be on the disabled list this year at all. I just don't understand it. And like, going back to like the rotisserie leagues, like 5x5, there are people who draft Dellin Betances in rotisserie leagues, despite the fact he doesn't get saves. Oh, because the ratios are so good. Yeah, he only pitched 80 innings last year. Rich Hill's going to pitch you 120. Like, there's still value there. You see what I'm saying? Like, they use an argument and a counter argument for different players, and they randomly apply them whenever it fits whatever kind of narrative they're trying to say. So this is a long-winded way of me saying that absolutely I'm going to take Rich Hill. Felix Hernandez, I think he bounces back a little bit, but the days of old are long gone, guys. I think he goes back to being more of like a really high 3 ERA, maybe like 3.7, 3.8. They have a really, really good improved outfield defense in Seattle that might help him a little bit. But I'm just out on Felix, and like I said, if I could get 120 innings of Rich Hill, I'm going to take it.
Yeah, that's a good point with the defense on Felix. Van, are you going to make it another sweep?
I am, but I do want to point out, too, you mentioned, Yancey, the people using certain arguments, not universally. Spring training stats are the key example of that. Spring training stats don't matter, but did you see that this guy has 3 home runs and 20 at-bats? It's crap like that annoys me. Now, what I'll play devil's advocate. I'll use my time to do that here. I'm going to take Rich Hill. he's clearly going to give you, you know, 100 really good innings. Hernandez is a wild card. He could bounce back more than some people think. If I was going to pick somebody to compare, because I'm going to be pro Felix Hernandez, I'm going to point to Justin Verlander as a guy who, you know, fell off the map and then suddenly, you know, should have won the Cy Young last year. Hernandez doesn't really have that luxury because his velocity's down, but he could bounce back. This is arguably one of the best pitchers we've seen over this, what, 8-year span, minus maybe the last year or two. So he has the talent to do it. I don't think he does, but maybe that's a little bit of optimism for Felix Hernandez. But in this case, take Rich Hill. I mean, he's really good. I don't like it. It annoys me that some 40-year-old guy just suddenly is really good out of the rotation, but it is what it is. So I would take Rich Hill, hands down.
Yeah, and this is, you know, the power of great podcasting. I've recently resubscribed to the Effectively Wild podcast, and all I can think about when I see the name Felix Hernandez is trampoline, because he posted a video of him jumping on a trampoline, and they just think that that's the most dangerous thing you can possibly do. And as a trampoline owner myself, I can confirm that I nearly broke my back one time trying to do a backflip on it. Terribly dangerous.
Stop because of course you own a trampoline.
I do. It. We had a really bad storm one year too, and it had a nice like net around the side, very safety conscious. But then the storm, there was like 70, 80 mile an hour updrafts, and the trampoline ended up 3 houses down, upside down in their backyard, and the whole canopy, the net was just crushed, like all the steel pipes or whatever that, you know, they were just all bent, and so we ended up getting rid of them. So now there's no safety netting, and there's exposed like piping with nothing covering them. So I don't know why I let my children jump on there. It's probably a bad idea.
Have fun, kids.
Yeah.
Yep. Real quick, I want to point this out. This is nothing to do with anything, but it's really important I say it. Good. I have my baseball prospectus book in front of me, which I often look at for statistics.
Me too.
It's amazing. Best book ever. Buy it. But I want to point out that they have comparables for each player, and it lists, you know, people, players that are similar to them. And under Clayton Kershaw, the third comp is Eric Bedard.
Wow.
Now, I mean, Eric Bedard was awful good that one time for a little bit, but not a fan of that comp.
Yeah.
Eric Bedard getting a shout out on the Nasty Cast this week. Did not see that coming. Love it.
In 2017, Eric Bedard. And here we are. Here
we are. By the way, guys, Jamie Moyer making a comeback. How about that?
Don't even make me talk about Jamie Moyer more. I've done so much of that lately.
I won't. In fact, we shall move on. We got Marcus Stroman, whose ADP is 143, against John Lackey, whose ADP is 144. Yancey, you get to go first, so I'm not going to steal any of your numbers this time.
Was his ADP 144, or was his age? Da-doom!
Oh!
Because Lackey's so old.
He's lacking youth?
Yep, he is lacking youth. This is, man. Okay, so all of these, I understand that the ADP, it's an ADP war because they're being very closely drafted, but why is Marcus Stroman being taken so late? I don't understand that at all. Like, his innings are going to go up this season. I mean, doesn't he throw like five or six different pitches? He throws a two-seamer, a four-seamer. I mean, he has like a really good cutter. I just don't understand this. Yes, he doesn't play in a good ballpark, whatever, but there's absolutely no upside built into John Lackey whatsoever. There's no growth potential in his profile at all. And if you're taking a pitcher that late anyway, why not take the dude that has some upside built in with him? I just don't understand that. That's really all I have to add to that. So, like, what do you guys think about this? Why are they being taken so closely? Because they have such different, like, career projections from here on out. I just don't understand.
Well, I think, the surface ERA, Yancey, is 4.37 for Stroman. Anybody drafting him as a number two, number three pitcher, they're going to see that and they're going to walk away. That's why they listen to podcasts like this one, so we can tell them what the difference is. His 4.37 ERA perhaps was a bit unlucky, but Van, it is your turn to speak. So
I'm actually going to go opposite here. I'm going to take John Lackey, believe it or not. Ooh. And I'll tell you why. Stroman, I know he can improve, but I have no interest in him. I mean, you talked about Sonny Gray being bad with a 7.5 K per nine. Stroman's like, what, 7? I mean, he doesn't strike anyone out. And if you look at his career ERAs here, his best one was 3.7. Now, that's kind of misleading, but guess what? We count ERA in fantasy baseball, so that matters. Lackey's going to be absolutely safe. He's going to give you exactly what you're expecting here. And I usually preach upside. I just don't think Stroman has that upside. I think he could be better, but I don't know. What do we expect? Maybe a 3.5 ERA at best. And again, he's still not going to strike anyone out. Even Lackey has a better K per nine.
Yeah, you know, I picked these out personally myself because I think that they're fairly close to me. And so while this was definitely not close for Yancey, it's pretty close for me. You know, you went Lackey, but I'm going to go Stroman, Van.
Tiebreaker vote.
There it is. So Stroman wins by a hair. But when we look at the strikeout rates, like you said, Lackey's got him, but I think there might be a little bit of regression there. He did have an 11.5 swinging strike rate, which is up from 9.4% the year prior. So that is encouraging that he could get, you know, stay in the eights or so. Whereas Stroman, he's stuck in like the low to mid sevens as far as K per nine, and he does have a pedestrian swinging strike rate, 9.3%. Doesn't project really any uptick time soon. So I will say that if Lackey is healthy, if both these guys are healthy for the season, Lackey will win in strikeouts. I just think that there's a lot of regression coming from Lackey. You know, the Cubs had a historically good defense last year, and Lackey benefited from that a lot. A 255 batting average on balls in play in a hitter's park. I just don't see that repeating. His FIP and ex-FIP said a 380 ERA was more deserved rather than the 335 ERA that he accomplished last year. And Stroman, I think that you know, he's got on the complete opposite. He's got a lot of positive regression coming. His FIP was 371 last year, whereas ERA was 437. You know, ex-FIP was 341, so even better. Elite ground ball rate, 60%, keeps the ball on the ground. Great command. So I think that Lackey, being 38 years old, there's only downside there, whereas Stroman, there is a small twinge of upside, not necessarily with K's, like I said, but so I'm going to go Stroman there. I hated Lackey last year, too, and he burned me, so I'm just going to make it 2 years.
He's also a real scumbag in real life, just so you know. John Lackey, yeah, he divorced his wife right after she was diagnosed with cancer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Plus that face, I mean, have you seen his face?
Oh, yeah, coming up through his career. I had to see that stupid head a lot. It was awful.
He does have a stupid – he's a terrible human being, so I feel confident – or I feel good saying that he's got a stupid face. I can see
exactly,
that.
Yeah.
Anybody else, I would feel bad saying that. But with him, that is not the case. All right, so our last ADP war is going to be Jeff Samardzija versus Aaron Nola. Both of their ADPs are at 174. Van, you get to kick us off here.
Aaron Nola, 100%. The only knock right now, and the only way this is close, is because of the health scare with Nola. Nola came up last year, and I know he's tailed off at the second half, but I think you can also point to a little bit of injury with that. So to me, it's injury. That's the only thing holding him back. Samardzija was fine. In fact, he had a pretty decent rebound season in San Francisco, but he still doesn't strike anyone out. I don't know. He's just very vanilla, whereas Nola, to me, could be a really, really good pitcher, like top 10 pitcher, if everything breaks right. Maybe it doesn't, but I still think he's going to get to some decent innings. He threw the other day, didn't have any issues as far as health. So I like Nola a lot here.
Completely agreed. I had to make sure that I was off mute. I just spilt a little beer as I was refilling. Sorry.
Oh, that's a sin.
It is, yeah.
That's all right. I'll bring in the cat to lap it up. Cat's a silk. Yeah, Aaron Nola. Aaron Nola, 4.78 ERA last year. His FIP and ex-FIP were both 3.08. Tremendous 55% ground ball rate. Seventh in Major League Baseball. And by the way, I still had that that FanGraphs 110 innings pitched limit on there. So that worked out really well because Aaron Nola, another guy with like 111 innings last year. So that worked out really well that we talked about these. Yeah, 3.34 BABIP anyway. On just 29% hard contact, crazy low strand rate, 61%, 9.6% swinging strike rate says that you know his K's might trend downward a little bit. His K per nine last year was 9.81, but I still think it'll be better than what he did in 2015. They went up last year. He increased his slider usage by 10%. Ground ball rate also went up 8% because he practically scrapped the four-seamer for the sinker. And that pitch gets 61% ground balls. And the changeup actually induced 64% ground balls despite being his worst pitch. So there's at least that to look at. So no splits at all. I just love Aaron Nola coming into this year. I think I'm going to be owning him in a lot of leagues. Shark, you know, there's... He gets a quality start boost, I guess, because he throws so many innings every year, and he's definitely not the injury risk. But, you know, it's Nola all the way. Yancey, what do you got?
I think with Samardzija, I mean, this is really vanilla analysis, but his range of outcomes is actually really small. We kind of know exactly what we're going to get with Samardzija. And, you know, he is a little bit older, but I feel pretty confident in the fact that he's going to give me really solid innings. And like you said, in quality starts leagues, it's actually really valuable. But with Nola, I mean, this is like elite command and control. Everybody's been talking about this since he was in the minors. Like, you know, this dude, it has pinpoint precision. He can put the ball wherever he wants. The 9.8 K per nine last year was really, really surprising. A lot of people said that, like, you know, he's not going to be that type of guy that can strike out a batter per inning, and he did. I acknowledge what you're saying about, like, the swinging strike percentage and stuff, but I do think that with another year of experience and just, like I said, everything went wrong that could have gone wrong from, like, the ERA department, but the peripherals are there. This dude just knows exactly what he's doing as far as, you know, throwing the ball. I can see, like, a scenario where, like, he has, like, a 3.3 ERA, you know, a strikeout per inning, you know, possibly goes, you know, with the injury concerns, I don't think he's going to eclipse 200 innings, but I mean, 180, 185, this is basically like Kenta Maeda East, you know what I mean? Like the exact same type of peripherals and stuff. So I like targeting pitchers that have a little bit more strikeout upside, but for where he's being taken, I actually don't mind it at all. And this is like that fine line between injury news being like a deterrent and you staying away from them, or injury news actually helping because like it suppresses their draft ADP so much. And I really, really like where Nola's going, because, you know, if he doesn't pan out, if he does get hurt or whatever, it's not going to absolutely decimate you. And this is the type of pick where you're basically like cementing yourself with like really, really solid numbers, so you can go get some more risky starting pitchers that maybe don't have the pristine peripherals, like somebody like a Carlos Rodon or something.
Oh, I love Carlos Rodon. Van?
You already talked to me about it, but hey, I'll say something else. And that is, if you change the question to who is more likely to be at a Renaissance festival, then I think we all agree that Jeff Samardzija is the winner.
Fact. He does look like he fences like as a hobby, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. He yells Zaw after every pitch he throws. I guarantee it.
In my defense, Van, I was busy trying to not have beer soak into my carpet.
Sure, I mean, that's important. You're distracted. I get it. No qualms here.
Yeah, again, great hosting on my part. So we're going to take a break, and then we're going to look at our targets.
I'm going to make your heart explode.
All right, here we are. We're about to be more positive than ever before. We're going to talk about starting pitcher targets, and we're going to begin with our guest of honor rather than our guest of dishonor, Yancey Eaton. What do you think? What kind of guys are you targeting this year in the top 50 starters?
You just want me to kind of like speak on them all at once, or are we going to do 1-1-1, 1-1-1?
Just go ahead and rattle off whoever you got.
This is kind of cheating because you did say top 50. Carlos Rodon is being taken as the 51st pitcher. I'm all on board. I love him. Obviously, he's left-handed, and I'm left-handed. I don't know why I have like this reverse lefty bias that you see in baseball. I don't know what has to happen for him to figure it out as far as the whip thing goes. I think he's gonna be one of those starting pitchers where he's never going to be an asset as far as, you know, just giving up tons of hits and shit. I think that's always going to be a problem with him. But the upside is just so high with him as far as strikeouts go. This is the type of pitcher where I almost wish that they would trade him as well, because that ballpark is just insane. And, you know, like if he went to another ballpark like a San Francisco or even like a Tampa Bay, man, he could really have some fantastic numbers. But from where he's being drafted, like in the range right at the back end of the top 50, there's so much upside built in here. And I'm willing to give away a little bit as far as like the whip categories go for that elite strikeout upside. As far as my number four, Kevin Gausman. Kevin Gausman, we've been waiting on him what seems like forever. I don't think people realize, though, you know, he had like a really, really slow start last season. But after August 1st, he had a 2.83 ERA, and he had the highest whiff rate on his fastball in Major League Baseball. He does give up a lot of really hard contact, though. So, like, locating his pitches is a serious problem because he hangs pitches just right over the plate often. And that's why he had like that super elevated home run to fly ball rate last year. That's another guy I'm targeting. Oh, yeah, his splitter, too, which is just do you guys ever notice that, like, you kind of, like, gravitate towards, like, pitchers with, like, the same profiles? I love pitchers who throw splitters a lot. Like, that's, like, my thing. Like, him, like, Matt Schumacher, I'm always looking out for them. But yeah. Anyway, the other one for me is Keuchel. So, Keuchel, I know I just, like, hated on him, like, 5 minutes ago. He was bad last year. I understand that he was bad. He was dealing with shoulder injuries all season long. Apparently, the reports coming out of camp are that he's completely healthy. He had no discomfort. They're kind of babying him into the spring. He just had his first start on Monday. Three scoreless innings, I think 5 strikeouts. And like I said, he claims to be completely healthy. You know, this guy went from, you know, last season he had a 9-12 record. He had like a 4.55 ERA in 2016. It was just 2 years ago they had 2.48 ERA in 124 games. I think, you know, the only variant that was different between those two seasons was health. And if he is healthy, I think we can, we can expect that elite ground ball ratio to return. And just where he's being taken, it's just, I mean, it makes a lot of sense for me. Tanaka, being taken 20th overall, looks amazing. He's only pitched 9 innings in the spring, but he has 13 strikeouts. Last year, he along with Chris Sale, they both went to more of like the pitch to contact thing, and he intentionally lowered his velocity, just trying to pitch deeper into games, and it worked. It is encouraging though to see him coming out completely healthy. It's weird that like he's one of the safest as far as like year over year performance goes, but he also has a partially torn UCL, which, you know, you wouldn't think of that as being like a safe profile, but I think that's why he never dips down into like the 12 to 15 starting pitcher range as far as ADPs go. He's always taken like in the back end of that, like in the 19 to 20 range. And then the last guy I want to talk about very, very quickly is my boy. This is like the most obvious bounce back candidate as far as starting pitchers go. That
Corey Dickerson is not a starting pitcher, Yancey.
I just wanted to find out a way to get him into the show. Okay. Corey Dickerson, by the way, has like a 1,200 OPS in spring, but I know spring stats don't matter. But anyways, Chris Archer, he's being drafted as a 14th starting pitcher. Okay, so through June of last season, he had a 4.76 ERA and a 1.45 WHIP, which is obviously dog shit. That's terrible. He had a ton of early home run issues. He couldn't locate at all. But then he went on a complete tear in the second half. So in the first half, he had a 3.93 walk per 9 and then 26.9% strikeout rate, right? In the second half, he basically halved his walk rate to 1.87 walks per 9 and a 28% strikeout rate. I mean, his FIP in the first half was 4.25. It was 3.29 in the second half. Baseball Prospectus's deserve run average, he basically had a 3.23. I mean, so every single, you know, underlying metric that you can turn to suggests that he's going to bounce back. I mean, even as awful as this is from a ratio standpoint, I mean, he still struck out 233 batters and 201 innings pitched. I mean, everything is there that you want. The innings are there. The health is there. The strikeouts are there. Like I said, it's such an obvious pick to me. He's the guy that's being taken out of the top 10 that I can easily see being a top 4 or 5 starting pitcher. I'm honestly going to be targeting him in almost every single draft. If I don't get like the first like 5 or 6 of the, you know, the elite guys, I'm going to be targeting Chris Archer in almost every single auction and draft. So that's what I got.
Boy, that is a lot to talk about there. I think the one thing that I'll say real quick is that Chris Archer, I'm completely on board with you on that one. I love his value. But one thing that I'm going to vehemently disagree with you on is Dallas Keuchel. I actually, a little bit of foreshadowing here, I actually wrote him down as one of my avoids, because I just think that, I mean, where's he going? Obviously top 50, towards the end of the back end of the top 50. 34, actually. That's not that bad. Right in front of Marcus Stroman.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to take Gausman over Marcus Stroman?
Over
Kevin Gausman? Over John Lackey?
Kevin Gausman, but over John Lackey, yes. I mean, like, look, like, going in front of is Danny Salazar, who's a huge injury risk. Felix Hernandez, who we just saw be terrible for a year and a half. I mean, even Rich Hill, who I love, like, he's an injury risk. Like, all these guys have warts. And like I said, Keuchel is going into the season healthy. I think a lot of times people overvalue statistics in a season where you knew that a player was hurt. You know what I mean? Like, you can tell me all the statistics in the world, but like, if a player can't grip a ball properly or he is changing his arm slot because he's in, you know, experiencing discomfort, I don't see what value statistics actually hold. But like I said, I'm betting on the fact that he is completely healthy and that what we saw in 2015 is going to return.
So you think the velocity will tick back up from the 88 mile an hour fastball that he's had last year?
I do.
Okay.
I mean, we were all just raving about Nola. Nolan's average fastball velocity is like 91. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
say that Keuchel gets back up to 91 or 92. I don't see that being an issue. Fastball velocity isn't everything, but I mean, he's left-handed too, which helps. And it's just, I'm betting on the fact that he will be healthy.
All right. Fair enough. Dan?
I will back you up, Yancey, on Keuchel. I'm all on board with him. I think the price is the nice part with him. he's not going to put it together another Cy Young year. I just don't think that's in his pedigree to the type of pitcher he is. But he's very good value for where he's going. So I agree on the rebound. I'll throw out a couple of names. We had a lot on the same list, so I'll put some different names in here. Chris Archer, I'm big on, of course. Yu Darvish, we talked about earlier. I think, again, he just kind of like you said about Archer, he could be a top five pitcher this year. So I'm really big on him. I'm probably the only person left in the world who's still really high on Gerrit Cole. I know there are some injury risks, but, I mean, last year we were talking about him taking the next step up and becoming an utter ace. So I think he still has it in his pedigree. If he can get over his injury histories, there's a prime example of a guy going fairly low as far as the true aces go who could provide more value. I do like Danny Salazar, despite what you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. If he ever puts it together and he gets past that, you know, every fifth game is an absolute blow up, then you've got ace numbers. He strikes out a lot. He does walk too many, but control, you know, if he gets it down, great. Matt Harvey, I like based on where he's going. Again, injury risk guy. I know.
Are you worried about the velocity, though? He's been really down this spring.
Oh, who cares? If we get
I do.
Another 2 weeks into it and he's this far down, early spring, I don't care. I really don't care about velocity. Greinke doesn't bother me right now. 2 weeks from now, if they're throwing 5 miles an hour lower than they do, yes, I'm worried. But right now, they're ramping up.
Well, okay, but Greinke has consistently pitched in the low 90s for the last year, so he's not down that much. Matt Harvey is a power pitcher who used to be 95, 97, and now he's down in the low 90s.
Okay, so was Jacob deGrom. I mean, he used to be a power pitcher. Now he's down in the low 90s.
But this,
and he
this
can
spring
still
training, Jacob deGrom is up to 97.
Yes, well, is he really? Interesting.
Yes. Yeah, he's on like near the top 4 or 5 in added velocity by Jeff Zimmerman's. Like he charts all this stuff basically, and he's right there at the top. And right at the very bottom is like Scott Kazmir, who's down like 8 miles per hour.
Well, then I'm going to add Jacob deGrom to my list right now. No, I do like deGrom too, but I'm not that concerned about the velocity yet. Again, 2 weeks from now, maybe so. And I think the price that you'd be paying for Harvey really isn't that much. I mean, he's so far down and he still has immense talent. So there's potential there. It's all going to depend on your roster construction. So if you've got, you know, four guys, or not four, because you wouldn't have any pitchers here, but if you've got pitchers ahead of him or on your staff, if it's a dynasty league or a keeper league that are question marks, like Aaron Nola, for example, then maybe you shy away from Harvey. But if you can afford the risk, then I think that's a great risk to take. And then the last name I'm going to throw out for you is Jameson Taillon. Really, really, really good. He's coming off of a pretty good debut last year, but he's also coming off of the two lost seasons to Tommy John surgery. He's not going to give you a ton of innings, but I really think he takes that next step up and provides you immense value when he does pitch.
Nice. There's, you know, Matt Harvey, obviously, I disagree with you on that one, which is funny because when I wrote about him on Fantastics recently, he was, you know, it was, like you said, it was early in spring training and his velocity was down, but whatever. And then the next outing, he got crushed and his velocity still wasn't up. And so my tune changed pretty quickly as far as, like, a guy who can – he's still a guy who can return a huge – like, he was obviously an ace in the past. So, you know, as starting pitcher 33 – that's huge profit potential there, but he just scares the crap out of me at this point. I had him last year, and he killed me. And, you know, the thoracic outlet, the history of pitchers returning to form after that is not good. I would say the most talented pitcher that has had it that I can think of would be Matt Harvey. So if anybody can return from that, it would be him. You know, but at this point, I got to change my tune on Harvey, and I'm going to be down on him. And then Salazar actually is another guy who I was interested that you brought up. Because I think I'm on the other side of him as well. Like, he's just a smallish pitcher that seems to get hurt, and he's really homer prone, and he's got poor command. So while the strikeouts are there, it's just too many holes in that profile. And that sort of speaks to this, like, one big giant tier for me as a whole. I had a really hard time finding a pitcher that I liked here. Like, outside of the elite starting pitchers, I'm avoiding this entire next tier, like all the way to the 40s, I think. Anywhere from like 17 to 40, basically. I'm just not interested in any of those guys at that price. I'm going with a lot of late round sort of upside plays this year, aside from the ace. And that's why I did pick Jacob deGrom is my one guy that I'm targeting this year. He's at 16 right now as far as starting pitchers go, 62nd overall, and he's sort of the last guy that I think is like a quote-unquote ace coming into the year. And as far as he's concerned, you know, he had surgery last year to you know, basically remove some scar tissue from his elbow. And when the doctor was in there, he said, oh, his UCL looks great. So there's that. Anyway, his velocity, like we said, is back up to – he's touched 96, 97 this spring. Even in a down year last year, he had a 3.04 ERA in 148 innings. Was close to a strikeout per inning. I think that'll get back up over 9. The only thing about him, he's never gone 200 innings. You know, I was just kind of dogging on Danny Salazar for being a smaller guy who doesn't pitch that many innings. If you do go with DeGrom, I don't think you can count on 200 innings. But at that value, I do like it.
DeGrom might also lead the league. Well, he'll compete with Jeff Samardzija as far as Renaissance festivals attended this year.
You know what's funny is I think it's the Effectively Wild Facebook group, actually, that some guy was at a wedding with Jacob DeGrom this past weekend. And so he took a picture with him. He was, like, allegedly dancing with him and drinking with him and stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, very endearing. Seemed like a great guy. So on the flip side, let's go to some avoids. So, Yancey, you are our guest of honor, so we shall start with you again. Who are you avoiding inside the top 50 this year? Yancey?
All of them, apparently.
All of
or
them.
Or no one.
Sorry, I had muted myself. I just sneezed and I forgot. Okay, most of the names we had talked about before, and you know, I was just talking. I didn't realize that you guys couldn't hear me, and then you interrupted me, and I'm like, how rude. But yeah.
Okay. You're welcome.
Yeah. So, I mean, where do I even start? So we mentioned Carlos Carrasco. There's a lot of soft tissue injury concerns with him, and he's still being taken as a top 15 pitcher. I'm staying away. Same with DeGrom. I don't know. I teeter between targeting and avoiding him, but like at 16 overall for starting pitchers, I still think like there's a little bit too much risk there. And then even going down the list, like 15, 16, and then Kyle Hendricks at 17, literally everything that could possibly go right for Kyle Hendricks last year did. And people are talking about like this is going to improve. The Chicago Cubs literally had the lowest BABIP allowed to opposing hitters in like the history of freaking baseball last season. Even if it regresses only by 30 or 40 points, that's still a gigantic amount of production loss for these starting pitchers. It's just I'm constantly towing the line between being you know, rational about something and sounding like I'm being like overly down on a player. I'm not super down on him, but at 17th overall, I do not see him repeating that stat line. Some other names that I was looking at, you mentioned Danny Salazar. That's a stay away from me too. Not only does he have huge injury concerns all the time, but I play a lot of daily fantasy, and I know, Nate, you kind of dabbled in it a little bit last year. Man, that dude is a prayer whenever you are starting him. He could be electric, or he can absolutely get lit up, and you never know when it's going to come. You can never expect it. I'm curious what you guys are going to do about one starting pitcher that I'm really high on just because I love the curveball so much, but all the contextual factors are really kind of like weighing down on him, namely injuries and the ballpark that he plays in. Like, what is you guys' take on Lance McCullers? Because I want to be high on him just because I like him as a pitcher. But I mean, right now he's being drafted as a 43rd overall starting pitcher, and I do think that that's like a little too rich for my blood.
I would actually agree with you. I think, well, here's what I do with Lance McCullers. I want him to succeed. I think he will succeed. I'm probably not going to pay for him to succeed.
Okay. Do you think it happens this year?
I think if I look at the timeline of things, I think you see semblances of it. I think there are underlying stats we look at. So maybe next year when we're doing this podcast and he's maybe going 5 or 10 spots higher, we think, okay, this is breakout candidate. He could be top 20 pitcher, you know, something along those lines. So I think it could happen. I don't know if it happens this year. And that's probably why, again, I just won't pay the price this year. But if it happens, I'm not going to be surprised at all.
You know, I'm so glad that you brought up Lance McCullers. And as soon as you said the word curveball, I knew that's who you're going to talk about. So yep. Before I took this job writing for Big Guy Fantasy Sports, I was going to do some bonus stuff for Fantistics just because I was bored and I like writing about baseball. And I started writing about Lance McCullers. And I didn't finish it because I didn't know what the hell was going on, because I loved some of the numbers that I looked at. But the more and more that I looked into him, the less I liked him. So let me just read verbatim what I had written up. I called that up as you guys were talking. I wrote, McCullers pitched like a borderline ace in 2015 with a 3.22 ERA and 9.24 K per nine. His 2016 was a bumpy ride, though, as he started as the start to his season was delayed due to injury and also ended early for the same reason. He finished with just 81 innings, but not only matched his 3.22 ERA from the prior year, he increased his K per 9 to 11.78, putting him behind only the late Jose Fernandez and Yu Darvish, and ahead of the likes of Scherzer, Strasburg, and Syndergaard in the K per 9 category. He didn't fill up the strike zone, however, allowing a nasty 5 walks per 9. Both the Ks and walks are thanks in large part to a crazy usage of his curveball at a whopping 49.5%. He threw it even more than his fastball, which he deployed 43% of the time. The remaining 7.5% of his pitches were changeup, a pitch that was crushed last year to the tune of a 750 slugging percentage. It was a bad pitch, and clearly he didn't trust it, so this year he's coming in with the intent of proving it and balancing his deployment, relatively speaking. If he can progress it to an average pitch, that will go a long ways towards McCullers remaining a starter. He needs it because even his four-seam was hit hard last year, yielding a 606 slugging percentage. And it was at that point that I stopped writing because I couldn't tell if I liked McCullers or hated him. And so I think
that is definitely worthy of a Pulitzer, though. I got chills as you read that.
I'm glad that I read it there because I don't think I'll ever publish it. Yeah. Because I have other things to write about at the time. But yeah, I don't think that I'm going to be drafting McCullers. I loved him before I started writing about him. And just because really the curve seems like his only good pitch and he's got injury concerns and horrible control, I don't think I'm that interested.
Yeah.
What I'll say about him too, that he kind of reminds me, he's only 23, so we've got a lot of time for either to go great or go horribly. He reminds me a little bit of a Garrett Richards type, a guy who has a pretty good, a big fastball that he can't quite harness yet, some good secondary offerings, but just hasn't put it all together. So Richards, it took until he was 25, 26 before he kind of put it all together and was suddenly really good. Now, hopefully the whole injury stuff doesn't happen with McCullers, but if he succeeds, if McCullers succeeds, I see him kind of taking that path to success.
I do agree. Continue, Van.
Oh, yeah, I guess I can go with my avoids. Pretty much for me this year, it's anybody with injury woes. So we talked about Carlos Carrasco. Obviously, David Price, I have no interest in touching. I know, blah, 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 he's fine. He has a bionic elbow or whatever they're talking about. No, thank you. I'm not going to do it. Rick Porcello is – I just won't own him if he's ever in the top, 25 pitchers. And I'm looking at the ADP right now. He's at, 22. I just don't like it. He doesn't strike anyone out. There's always been the thought of him being a good pitcher back when he was in Detroit, and by all accounts, he put it together last year. He shouldn't have won the Cy Young. That was Verlander's, but no thank you to Rick Porcello for me. I think Carlos Martinez is a little high for where I would take him. I also don't know what kind of pitcher Carlos Martinez is. He scrapped the strike everyone out mentality to the pitch to contact thing, so are we going to get that? Are we going to get him reverting back to striking out a lot of guys but struggling as far as going deep into games? I don't know. It's a little high for me to take him. He's currently at 18. I'd probably look at him in the 22, 23 spot. That's where he'd find value. And then lastly, a guy that I know a lot of people love for some reason is Aaron Sanchez of the Toronto Blue Jays. I'm staying away. He had a huge innings jump last year. He had the Sonny Gray K per 9 of 7.5. I'm just not that interested, particularly pitching in Toronto. I know he had success, but it's just not someone that I'm going to focus on this year.
I agree with all of your avoids, and that speaks in large to the fact that I just don't really like hardly anybody in this entire year. I think they're all overvalued. I'm going to be avoiding almost all of them. But I will say that, you know, like I mentioned before, I'll echo your sentiments. Carlos Carrasco I had written down. But Harvey and Keuchel, you guys both like them. Those both made my avoids list for different reasons. Just not too interested there. But, yeah, draft Carlos Rodon, I think, if there's anything that we want to get out of this podcast.
Nate, let me ask you one question.
Sure.
Who is like your sleeper as far as like super, super deep? Like one of the last starting pitchers taken that you like a lot. And don't say like James Paxton or Jarrell Cotton. Like who's like a weird name that you kind of like are holding in your back pocket?
Well, I would say Andrew Triggs, but he's kind of getting pushed up a little bit now. Mm-hmm. Daniel Norris, for some reason, is still going stupid late.
Yes!
I like him a lot, yeah.
Yes!
I don't understand why he's not going higher. He's at starting pitcher 94 right now.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't understand that at all. Robert Gesellman is another guy I'm really high on, down at starting pitcher 79, according to Fantasy Pros. And he's pretty much guaranteed to get that fifth starter job right now. So I like him a lot. But I don't think I can find anything more obscure than Andrew Triggs, who sadly isn't that obscure anymore.
Yep. I know I kind of put you on the spot there, but Van, do you have a name like that you're kind of stashing? You know, we were planning on talking about starting, you know, top 50 starting pitchers all night, but do you have like that super deep sleeper that's going to be in the majors this year?
Well, to be honest, I really haven't done a lot of redrafts. I've been mostly focusing on my dynasties and so forth. So I really haven't looked that deep. This is really gross to say, but I think Shelby Miller actually has a little bit of upside just because he's going at like 120 or something or other. And spring training stats, the velocity's up, blah, blah, blah. So I kind of like him. Foltynewicz is another name I really like out of Atlanta. Yeah. He throws hard, and if he could ever control a little bit, I mean, that guy's going to be awesome, I think. And I think he'll be good over our career. I don't think he reaches his potential, but that's definitely a guy I kind of have interest in. But that's about it for me, really.
Cool. I didn't mean to hijack this segment. I was just kind of curious. You know, this is an opportunity to talk to two other people, and I wanted to hear, like, some different names because I keep hearing the same half dozen, you know, quote-unquote sleeper names or whatever. But,
right.
Nate, I will now return your podcast back to you. So here you go.
Well, turnabout is fair play, as they say, Ansi. Do you have any deep league names that you're in love with?
Well, no. I mean, Daniel Norris was – that's kind of like the one that I'm targeting. I've tweeted out a couple times about like just his velocity and what his ERA looked like and like his last six or seven starts last year. It was like under three. I'm really targeting him. Joe Musgrove last year, whenever he got called up, he was kind of like the sabermetrician darling, and then he kind of got lit up two or three starts in a row. I'm still relatively high on him. Other than that, though – Jose De Leon, after all that speculation that he was going to break camp in the majors, they sent him down today. So I'm kind of out on him as like an early season sleeper. Other than that, I don't really have a whole lot. It's interesting that you did mention Shelby Miller, though, Van, because like we were talking about with the velocity, he's added like 4.5 miles per hour to his average fastball velocity in the spring, and he still has 2 weeks to ramp it up. So I'm kind of excited about those names.
Yeah. And that, go ahead, Van.
One name that actually just came to me is Nate Karns with the Royals. He was traded from Seattle. He pretty much – they came out and said that he's likely to get that fifth starter spot. He's always had decent stuff. I think you have to temper expectations, but I think he could provide value just because – I mean, I don't know where he's going, but I'm sure it's not good. So there's potential there in my opinion too.
And I'll say Lance Lynn too, as a guy who's coming off of Tommy John surgery. He's going as starting pitcher number 80, and his numbers are really, really good for the Cardinals, you know, before the surgery. So I think that at the price that he's giving, you know, the ratios, the whip especially, not great, but I think a pretty solid guy later in drafts. But that is going to be it for the fantasy portion of the show. So anybody who doesn't like bullshit, go ahead and tune out right now. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with a top five list.
One time, we successfully made it a bulldog with a shih tzu.
Really? That's weird.
Yeah, we called it a bullshit.
All right, and we are back with our first BS segment in quite a long time, but it feels good. You know, Yancey, it was really great having you back one more time. We've been trying to infuse a lot of new voices, new personalities as far as guests this season, and you're a familiar voice, not a familiar face because I can't see your face right now, just your voice. But it's felt very good having you back. So this has been a very fun episode for me. So we're going to do our top five honest product slogans. And we're going to start off with Jesse. What do you have for us?
All right. My number five is pickles. Because cucumbers are just plain gross.
Oh, Yancey is as a man who deals with produce.
Yeah, I don't really know what to say to that. I for one, actually like cucumbers. And spoiler, I also have a slogan about cucumbers.
Wow.
What are the odds?
Yeah. We have that to look forward to.
This is for hard plastic casing. Do you hail Satan? Do you love to cut others?
That's good enough. You stop there, yeah.
Holy shit. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Maybe I should have just stopped there. Oh, no. Do you hail Satan? Do you love to cut others with sharp objects? Do you love to make people swear out of frustration? Do you want customers who have just purchased merchandise to suffer through delayed gratification as they make cumbersome efforts to free their fancy new stuff? Then encase your product in a hard plastic casing.
That's very accurate. I like it.
Oh, I thought I thought these were slogans, not whole commercials.
mine vary a lot.
Well, there you go. All right, so I have mine here. My first one is, of course, real sponsor of the NastyCast, Dots Pretzels. Ooh. They're so good, you'll guest on a Dakotan podcast multiple times and not want to kill yourself.
That's really good.
Thank you.
Okay. I can't remember. Can we cuss on this show?
Yeah, sure. It's just more work for Jesse.
Jesse, do you care?
You do whatever you want.
Okay. My first one is for you guys know the Smuckers where it's like peanut butter and jelly in the same jar?
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's called Smuckers Goober Grape PB&J. Ugh.
You?
And the slogan should just be, for people who've f***ing given up.
Oh, man, that stuff is terrible.
I'm still, like, caught up. Like, I could still – I'm, like, fighting back laughter from the, do you hail Satan? I'm sorry. That was just absolute podcast gold. I'm sorry.
I should have –
Who's next?
I should have closed with that then. All right, Jesse, what's your number four?
My number four is for the brand Simply White, which is bread. It's not the carbs. It's the ton of butter you're using to consume it.
Does that bread suck? I've actually never had it before.
Yeah. It's like the cheapest bread you can find, and it's just white bread that, like, as you try to put butter on it, it rips holes in it.
Yes. There's nothing worse than that.
There's also one called Bimbo brand white bread. I don't know if anyone's seen this. It's horrendous. It's the most vile substance I've ever encountered.
Bimbo?
Bimbo. B-I-M-B-O. Yeah, that's their name.
All right. My number four, crayons. Not just for shoving up your ass anymore. When you pass out at the party, you can wash that dick off your face much more easily than if it was permanent marker. And it'll be more colorful.
All right, my next one is Hungry Man Frozen Dinners. And their slogan is, when sweatpants don't tell the whole story of how little you care about life, enjoy a Hungry Man Frozen Dinner.
Hungry Man Frozen Dinners are the golden corral of, like, frozen foods.
They're pretty nasty.
Do you guys know what potato logs are?
Oh, yeah.
I do
not. You know,
not.
Like, you can go to, like, Walmart at, like, the deli or whatever. It's basically, like, where they like, chop up potatoes and, like, they season them. You know what I'm talking about? You've never heard them? They're also called potato wedges, potato logs.
Oh, okay. No? Potato wedges, sure.
Yeah. Well, at Walmart, they're called potato logs. I remember in high school, I went to go get something to eat, and we walk into Walmart. And I don't know why, but this just stuck with me, and I wanted to put it in the show. But he's like, dude, he's like, what the hell are you eating? I'm like, they're potato logs. And he looked at me, and he goes, all the fun of a potato, but in the convenience of a log. And that has literally stood with me for like 12 years. I don't know why I just wanted to get it. So potato logs, that's my number, what, three? Number four?
Four, yeah.
Number four. That's funny. All right, number three, podcasts. Ask your wife if 3.5 minutes is enough for her. It's a shot at music.
I'm going to... You know what? The next time my wife is listening to a pop song, I'm going to go ahead and tell her that.
Then she'll start listening to podcasts.
I doubt that very much. But
well,
anyway.
According to you're saying that all you have your statistics of your listeners for this podcast, a heavy percentage of them is women. So maybe there you go. Your wife will be into it.
I should probably clean it up and say, ask your significant other if 3.5 minutes is enough for them. But, I mean, most guys would probably say yes.
Serious question. Has a woman ever listened to this podcast? Ever?
Our demographics say that 1 in every 10 do.
Really?
Which, yeah, I've never heard from a female listener. So if you're out there, give us a shout. So on to my number three, Bud Light. One time I drank a dozen of them and threw up on my spouse.
That's it.
Yep.
That's all it takes, man. Oh,
who's it on
boy.
Me?
That's me. I almost did a beer one, but I refrained. So my number three is similar. It's a beverage. Mountain Dew. It goes great with your Xbox Live subscription.
They should just give you gift cards for that.
They go hand in hand. Like, I've never drank a Mountain Dew because I don't hate myself that much, but I guarantee if I did, I would purchase an Xbox immediately.
That's actually a really bad take because Mountain Dew is delicious.
I like Mountain Dew. I used to be addicted to Mountain Dew, like really, really bad, but now I'm addicted to beer. Much better.
You grew up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. By the way, I don't know if you've ever tried to play MLB The Show wasted, but it's hard.
It's nope. hard in general, but I second that notion. I've played it drunk a lot.
You've played MLB Show sober?
I try to. I think my
I only
batting
play
average...
on Friday and, I only play on Friday and Saturday night, so...
All right, number three?
Yes, sir.
Diamonds, because loving her unconditionally actually isn't enough.
That is very true. That is the most honest of slogans that we've had to this point.
That was good. Although, I would like to say I'm going to one-up it with this one with being a more honest slogan. This is one I've already shared with you, Nate. Charmin, wipe the shit right out of your ass.
Leave it to Jesse to bring his toilet humor. Jesse.
That's as honest as they come right there.
All right, so we're going to move on from poop to food. Have you ever eaten bread and wished that it was made out of meat? Meatloaf!
I'm glad you didn't take that the route of the singer, though.
I've got enough.
That's too highbrow for this podcast.
Right, yeah.
So next up, I have Snapchat. Look, genitals!
Dude, guys, you know it's like a sign of the apocalypse? My mom added me on Snapchat.
No. Oh,
yep.
No.
It's like gone too far. I'm like, I'm done.
Who are we on? Jesse?
That was me, so it's Yancey.
Yancey.
What number are we on? Two?
Four. Two, yeah.
Let me look real quick. Avocados. We're nature's grenades.
Well, since we're on a food subject, I'm going to bring it back to poop here. Or actually, I'm going to tie the two together and say, Taco Bell, keep your stool loose. That's my number one.
Again, with the toilet humor.
Yes.
It just depends if you eat one of those tacos where the shell is actually a chicken. Have you seen? It's like chicken breast that's fried. That's the shell. They made that. Someone at Taco Bell said, I have an idea. And then someone else said, okay, let's do it. That's how that came to fruition.
So do they like make it almost crunchy, like almost in a chip form?
Yeah, it's like a deep fried flat deep fried chicken breast that they just stuff with taco meat and then just throw it at your head and you just shovel it down and then crap it out an hour later.
Cheese on it.
Oh man. Yeah, they slap you with the taco and tell you to get out. My number one. Do you like your food in the form of the dick of a man with jaundice? Eat bananas.
That thought often crosses my mind at 4 o'clock in the morning when I'm filling the banana table. Often.
I won't do it unless there's jaundice involved. I think you pretty much hit that hammer on third nail in the head. And finally, for you, I present Radio Shack. Please buy our products. My wife left me, and all I have left are those overpriced radio control cars. I'm so lonely.
Oh, poor Radio Shack.
Are they still in business?
Barely.
My last one, like I foreshadowed, cucumbers, not just for salads. We're Mother Nature's dildo.
There we go.
And great for scaring cats.
Yes.
Apparently. I have yet to try that with my cat. I forgot all about that.
You know why they do that? This is your van fact of the day.
Oh, boy.
Snakes.
Yeah, they resemble a snake. So in nature, if a cat sees a snake, it freaks out. So the cat sees a cucumber, it thinks it's a snake, freaks out. There you go.
Wow, science.
Makes perfect sense.
Oh, man.
Well, that... anything you don't know?
There's a lot I don't know. There's a lot more that I do know that makes no sense that I know.
I kind of just want to keep asking for van facts. Like,
well, okay, I'll explain too. My background is in – I have my double major in journalism and political science. So I am talented in BSing my way through things. So even if I don't know it, I can make it sound like I know what I'm talking about. So I kind of have that talent, I guess we'll call it.
I think that works well for podcasting.
It does actually, yeah.
And fantasy baseball analysis.
Or at least slightly, anyway. Yeah.
Yes. All right. Well, this top five has been brought to you by, of course, Pop Goes Your World, which Yancey is a part of. They pretty much do that every week. So, Yancey, go ahead and plug your podcast and tell the good Nasty Cast listeners where they can find you.
You guys can just find me on Twitter at Ian C. Eaton. And like you said, I do Pop Goes Your Will with Chris McBrien and then the Dear Mr. Fantasy podcast, where we do fantasy baseball and fantasy football during the season. And you guys are like my original gangster friends. We've been friends for a long time now, and it's nice to be back on the show talking about nature's dildos and whatnot. Do you hail Satan? Gosh, that's so funny. You really buried the lead there. Seriously, that's so funny. Thanks for having me on, guys. Seriously, I appreciate it.
It felt really good to do this show with you. But Van, go ahead and tell the people what you got going on this week.
You can find me, of course, at Twitter, at Manly Van Lee. I'm now friends with Yancey Eaton, at Yancey Eaton, so there's that. I also do another podcast, which is called The Backup Catcher. We're going to record an episode tonight, i.e. next week, whenever you listen to this, whatever. Anyway, we're debuting a new segment called ABC's Ask the Backup Catcher, where we delve out advice and so forth. You can also find our website at The Backup Catcher. No, not the, at backupcatcher.com. And my website, which is bootuinc.com, BOOTUINC.com, where you can read all the hot garbage that I spew out of my head.
Very good. Jesse, do you want to, like, plug your job or something?
I plan on going to work tomorrow and on Friday. And then I'll probably bring back the drunk Twitter frenzies, you know, in a couple Fridays from now. So follow me at Mr. Jesse Jordan. Make sure you're on Twitter from about 10:30 p.m. Central Time to about 2 a.m. to catch my best tweets, because when I wake up in the morning, most of them are deleted.
Yeah.
So
where do you work, Jesse? Do you work with Nathan at the Postal Service?
I do not. I do software and software, basically implementations and support for a, it's actually a co-op.
Oh, sorry we asked. God.
What I do?
I really thought at first he was going to go, I do software and software accessories.
That would have been a lot better. But
that's a tremendous
impression.
I've been working on that one for sure.
Tremendous. Thanks for that, Jesse. And thanks for joining us again. It was a pleasure to, you know, have you on the pod again with Yancey as well. It's been a fun spring, and you can find my work personally at fantistics.com or insiderbaseball.com, also bigguyfantasysports.com, and also I joined the Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast this past week, so if you are a big fan of fantasy baseball podcasts, you should be listening to that one as well, so go check me out there. And I guess with that, and until the next episode reaches your ear holes, may the fantasy gods.